Welcome back to Sports Talk. I'm Jimmy Himes along with Vince Ferrar. This is our final hour of the show, and we're pleased to be joined by SEC replay official Gerald Hodges. Gerald, how are you?
Doing well, Jimmy. How about you?
I'm doing fantastic. How's the trout fishing going?
It was pretty good this weekend. It was a good time away. Worked out really well. Vince, how are you?
I'm good, Gerald. Good to talk to you. Glad the fishing went well.
I did. It was always fun to get away.
And Gerald's appearance brought to you by A.G. Hines, selling building materials. Since anyone can remember, I've worked with A.G. Hines. What a great company. Gordon Hines does a terrific job. We certainly appreciate him and his sponsorship of Gerald Hodges. Gerald, I got to ask you about this. So I was watching a game over the weekend, and it was a running play from roughly the 8-yard line, and a running back takes off. An offensive lineman is blocking somebody. His helmet comes off. And rather than stop, he re-engaged in blocking a defensive lineman, actually knocked him into the end zone, and the running back then scored. I thought that if your helmet came off, you could not continue to engage and play. What's the rule there?
Okay. Of course, obviously, Jimmy, if a runner's helmet comes off, the ball is immediately dead. But there's been an interpretation that if the offensive lineman is blocking and the helmet comes off, and as long as he maintains contact with that defensive player, he can continue that. Now, if he gets away, in other words, he can't run somebody else down with no helmet and then throw another block. That would be a 15-yard penalty.
All right. Very good. Well, I saw that happen in a recent game, and I just wanted to get clarification on that. So, all right. Let's go to the phones where John is our first caller. John, you're on with Gerald Hodges.
Hey, guys. How's everybody doing tonight?
Fine, John.
Good, John.
Gerald, I have a question for you about a punt formation. So when a punter goes into a rugby-style kick, how long does he keep the normal protection for a kicker with respect to roughing? When does he become a runner when he veers to the side on a rugby-style kick?
Okay, John, that's a good question. It's becoming more and more prevalent. So a few years ago, they added to the rule on the punter's protection. If he runs outside the tackle box has become a pretty big landmark, obviously, for intentional grounding. But anyway, if the punter runs outside the tackle box, then he gives up his protection against roughing the kicker. So if he gets out there and kicks it, he's pretty much on his own.
Okay, great. Yeah, that answers my question. Thank you so much.
Okay. Good question, John. Yeah. If you have any other questions, 656-9900, 1-866-656-9900. Gerald, I got another one for you. Let's say a running back is carrying the football, and then he fumbles the ball. He reaches out with one hand, and he puts his hand on top of the ball for at least more than a second. He has control of the ball. Does that mean he's recovered it? Or do defenders have the opportunity to dive in there and try to wrestle it away from him? What's the rule there?
Well, that's one, Jimmy, I almost have to see. My question is, why did he just hold his hand on top of the ball?
Because he was reaching out. Yeah, he was reaching out in front of him by about a foot or two. So he couldn't corral it with his body. He reached out with one arm and put his hand on top of the ball. Does that constitute recovery?
Did he have it, or the fumbler have it, or the guy that fumbled had his reached out and got it back?
Yeah, he reached out and put his hand on top of it. He was the guy that fumbled and reached out and put his hand on top of the ball. So does that mean he's recovered it?
How long did he keep it that way? I guess it's what you'd have to see. I would think, though, the ball would be down, Jimmy.
Okay.
You know, of course, there's a difference between control and possession, but it's split hairs. But if he reached out and held the ball on the ground, he had his hand firmly on top of it, I would consider that, you know, down.
But that gets back to how long did he have it. So, yeah. So, I mean, I would think 2 seconds would qualify. Is that roughly right? Or
I would think so, definitely. That would be long enough to hold it like that.
Okay, interesting. All right.
Yeah, and in that scenario, it's hard to tell because a lot of times there's bodies all around. So how do you determine whether it was a second, 2 seconds? I mean, that's just such a tough type of scenario for
replay
for
official.
Officials. Right? Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that, thanks,
that's
Jimmy.
True. but then you have to have the view and all that kind of stuff, right?
Well, that's true. Vince had the exact statement. If you don't know where the ball is, and then you can't rule on possession, and, you know, it would be one. You lean heavily on the ruling on the field in that case. If they rule a turnover, it probably a lot. That would probably get a look at anyway to see if we could get a different angle fence. So, you know, we'll try to see anything we can, obviously.
Gerald, you had mentioned earlier in the year about the pregame, you know, extending the time that the officials have jurisdiction over play. Have you heard any feedback as to whether that has, you know, helped prevent any issues at all, or how that those adjustments have played out this year?
Well, I can speak from experience. The games I've had, you know, they extended the officials' jurisdiction from 60 minutes before kickoff to 90. And the other change was that if there are any players on the field, there has to be a coach on the field also. They can't be, you know, just a trainer or a manager. There has to be a member of the coaching staff on the field. And also, if they come out, you know, just with pants and T-shirts or pants and jerseys, and I've seen this done, they have to have a number on that jersey or T-shirt, obviously for identification purposes if something arises. But they've all been following that. They've either wore their game jerseys or a T-shirt. Some of them had some different, you know, social slogans on there, which was fine. But they have to have a number on them. So that and the games I've seen, it's been, you know, it's worked very well, Vince. There haven't been any issues whatsoever.
Another just general feedback type of question. With this year, some of those adjustments with, you know, the targeting rule and obviously players not having to leave the sidelines, which I think is a good thing. But what kind of numbers have you heard in terms of targeting this year? Are those numbers down? How much are they overturning them? Have you guys gotten any feedback on the targeting calls this year?
No, Vince, we haven't yet this year. That's usually, of course, we're approaching mid-season, I guess. We're there. But that's usually a later in the season. And, of course, there again, 2020, all bets are off as far, you know, it takes quite a bit of time to put those stats together. But I would be interested to see. But I'm guessing, just off the top of my head, I have no basis for it, but I'm guessing they're probably down a little bit. I don't know that it's a significant amount. But just from observing and listening, I would think they're down some anyway on the targeting.
I guess Gerald Hodges, SEC replay official. Gerald, I do want to ask you about this situation. On a kickoff, there was a game in which there was a little bit of a concern about whether – a ball touched a player, and before it went into the end zone, the other team recovered it. If on a kickoff, line drive, squib, whatever, and the receiving player touches the ball and it rolls in the end zone, that is a live ball, correct?
That's correct, Jimmy. It's also the same on a punt, a scrimmage kick, or even a field goal if someone's foolish enough to touch that ball if it's short. But the rule states that if a kick gets into the end zone untouched by the receiver, it immediately becomes dead. But if it's touched by the receivers in the field of play, then they have to go back and cover it. It is a live ball. That's correct.
Some people get really concerned when they say the replay official never stopped action to take a look at it, and they just let it go. It seems to me, though, there might be an occasion where the replay official has looked at it a number of times and realized he's already got a decision made, or he knows he's not going to have enough to overturn it, and so he's already looked at it. Is that correct? I mean, aren't there a lot of times you look at the play and think, there's no reason to stop it. I've already seen all I need to see.
That happens quite frequently, Jimmy, and I've had several this year where we've had either a turnover or a score, and, you know, and in either case, a turnover or a score, you've got a little time in the replay booth, and if we're efficient in the replay booth, we have the ability to look at about four or five shots on our own without having to wait for a replay from the production truck, which in some cases is not even at the stadium anymore. So, but if we get a confirming shot on the play, then, you know, then we probably will not, we won't officially stop it. We will look at every play in that situation. And then if it's, obviously, if we can't tell or we get a shot that's contrary to the ruling on the field, then obviously we'll shut it down and get it correct.
So, Gerald, just to follow up on that, you partially answered my question. You said you might be able to get, depending on the time available, four or five different looks on it. How many more looks could you potentially get if you did say pause play and say, all right, we need to take another look at it? And how much would it change if, say, it's a little bit quicker pace in the flow of play? How many more views could you get in replay versus what that time might allow it more in the run of play?
Great. Two great questions, Vince. First of all, depending on the network, and as I mentioned earlier in the year, the amount of cameras we have at our disposals just because of the crazy year it is down. We're not seeing as many camera crews go out, that type of thing. But and depending on the network, we have basically five or six we can pull up. But in some cases, you can get for sure three or four more views. Because and then we also have a handheld, which, you know, in some cases we can pull up if needed, but sometimes it has to come from the truck. But, well, for example, CBS typically, and I haven't had them yet this year, I will be soon, but they typically have 16 to 18 cameras, plus they have pylon cameras, they have a sky camera, and then, you know, a handheld, that type of thing. So depending on the game and the network, you could get anywhere from three to four to four, five or six or eight extra cameras. If it's, you know, if you can't see what you need in that, then that's another. If we can't see what we can get right off of our own, then we'll go ahead and shut it down and ask for views, and then they'll start feeding us, you know, replays from all those different angles. And I have an assistant in the booth, and they come to his screen. And he's a former official, and sometimes he'll say, here's our shot. And then, you know, they'll send it over to my screen, and it's plain as day, but it might be the seventh or eighth shot we see. Mm-hmm. And then and addressing your hurry-up offense, that, and what's really tough is when you get, you know, a game where both of them are doing that, you have to really concentrate. That sometimes will lead to a quicker stop on our part than, you know, say if they're just taking their time, or, you know, obviously if there's been a change of possession, we have a timeout, the score, TD, injury, those things there, you get an extra look. But if they're just going, no substitutions, and running to the line, snapping the ball in 10 seconds, if you feel like you don't have enough, you know, to look at it, and sometimes they'll try to beat us. They'll try to hurry up there and get the ball snapped. And that's another factor. So sometimes that's a little key that, you know, you take into consideration. So sometimes that would result in a little quicker stop than normal, but just to be sure. Great question.
That's Gerald Hodges, SEC replay official. His appearance brought to you by A.G. Hines, selling building materials since anyone can remember. When we come back, we'll have more. To join us, 656-9900, 1-866-656-9900. This is Sports Talk on the Sports Animal. Hold. Welcome back to Sports Talk. I'm Jimmy Himes with Vince Farrar. We are joined by SEC replay official Gerald Hodges, as we are each Monday evening through football season. His appearance brought to you by A.G. Hines & Company. They've been selling building materials since anyone can remember, and that means about 100 years, and they do a terrific job, A.G. Hines Company. All right, let's go to the phones where Greg is our next caller. Greg, you're on with Gerald Hodges.
Hey, Gerald, thank you for being available, for letting us ask questions here on the afternoon. One comment just to tell you where I'm coming from. I'm for less replay. I feel like in the last 2 minutes of football games, we're getting like the NCAA basketball and everything gets reviewed. How many plays are actually overturned as a percentage of those that are replayed? And then do you think we would ever roll it back to where you only replay possession and scoring plays? Thanks for being available.
Thank you, Greg.
Sure, no problem. And golly, I'm going back just from memory. Of course, the deal, Greg, too, is you've got to realize that when we stop a play, officially stop it, we've got at least a strong suspicion that there's been a mistake. So the percentage of official stops and then overturns is probably, and there again, don't hold me to it, but I'm going to say that probably the overturns might be 25%, the stands would be probably 50%, and then the confirms are probably 25%. That's give or take, somewhere in that range. So maybe say, well, that doesn't add up, but say 40.
Forty, twenty, and twenty, or forty and twenty, probably. Okay. You went 25, 50, and 25.
That'll work. That's probably about right. It really is somewhere in there again. It seems like the overturns are, a lot, but then there again, that typically, we've got to have a pretty good idea that there's been a mistake, or we don't stop it, but then we get in and then you see that you really can't tell. And typically on the confirms are the quickest. If we get a shot really quick, those tend to be less than a minute. And the stands will probably tend to be the longest, and then the overturns will be a little less too. But the ones we just have to, we're limited by not entirely, but it suggested we don't go over 2 minutes. And to me, that's a long review. So if it gets to 2 minutes and you can't decide, then, it's a major decision for you. It's going to have to stay.
I think he asked about could replay end up going to reviewing only the scoring plays, which the NFL, to a certain degree, they do, the scoring plays. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, one major difference, and I can understand that, but you got to realize that there's actually, if that official stops in college football is like 2.1 per ball game. Everybody thinks it's probably 8 or 10. It probably seems like if you're sitting off watching or in the stadium watching. But the average typically is about 2 to 2.1 per game. And the difference, one thing is the, of course, now the NFL, we've talked about this before, the NFL has a rule. They can review a pass interference or a non-pass interference call, they tend not to do that too much, but it's in the rule book now. But we have the targeting that we have to look at. That's a very big part of college football. And we will, you know, we will look at targeting anywhere, anytime. And that's a given. That's a mandatory stop, as you probably well know. So there are a few things that we, you know, we're not just going to let them. It won't be the wild, wild west until the last 2 minutes of each half. But, you know, there may be some things, you know, down the road that we could, you know, just go ahead and let them play and when he gets down to, you know, the last couple of minutes, maybe look at a little more stuff.
One thing I really dislike about the NFL deal, and now sometimes these things get changed from year to year, so if I'm wrong, Vince, correct me, but the NFL says we're going to review the scoring plays, but what if a guy actually scored and they ruled him short? So you can't review that because it wasn't a scoring play. That doesn't make sense to me.
No, that doesn't. That would to me would fall under. And of course, we do review those. That would be a potential scoring play. So, there again, I can't imagine they wouldn't if the guy scored and they ruled him down short. I mean, but. Yeah, that's something we definitely look at. All turnovers we confirm after every turnover and every score. If you'll notice, after a score and before the extra point, the referee will come and stand behind the center, hold both arms out, just like on the substitution field. And he will not let them go until we clear him from the replay thing. And there's several things we look at. One especially, you know, dropping the ball before you get to the end zone, that's a nightmare for us in the booth, but it happens. So
yeah.
We do things like that, and also, you know, we look for the targeting on the change possession plays, punts, interceptions, that type of thing. And so those are a few things I think are going to be with us regardless.
That's SEC replay official Gerald Hodges. His appearance brought to you by A.G. Hines & Company, selling building materials since anyone can remember. When we come back, we'll have more. If you got a question, 656-9900, 1-866-656-9900. With Vince Ferrar, I'm Jimmy Himes. Sports Talk 99.1, the Sports Animal.
If you smell something, that's probably us. We are 99.1, the Sports Animal.
Welcome back to Sports Talk. I'm Jimmy Hines with Vince Ferrar. Our guest, Gerald Hodges, SEC replay official. He's brought to you by A.G. Hines & Company, selling building materials since anyone can remember. Gerald, I want to ask you about this. We had a guy that called in early, and I'll set the scene. I think I know the answer, but I'll set the scene for you. He said he was watching a Big Ten game. It was Michigan and Minnesota. And he said that there was a running back that gained roughly 8 yards, and the flag was thrown at the line of scrimmage, but they marked the penalty off from where he had gained the 8 yards. A holding penalty would be a spot foul, correct?
Is it now? Is the ball on the offense or defense?
It was on the offense. It was offensive holding after an 8 yard gain.
Okay. right at the line of scrimmage is tricky, but basically the rule says, Jimmy, if the foul is by the offense and the run ends behind the line of scrimmage, then you penalize it for the previous spot or the fourth snap.
The line of scrimmage.
If it goes beyond the line of scrimmage, you penalize it from the spot of the foul, which in that case would be right at the line of scrimmage, right?
Right.
Because foul occurred. The basic spot is the end of the run, and then if it's behind the basic spot, it goes to the spot of the foul.
Okay.
So if he gained 30 yards and they foul 1 yard beyond, it goes back to that 1 yard beyond spot.
Yeah. And a lot of times you see on a kickoff or a punt return, there's a foul, and wherever that foul occurred on a holding or a block in the back or wherever, then it's marked out from that spot. So, in essence, it could end up, depending on how far the return was, that could be a 50 or 70-yard penalty. It could wipe out a touchdown, which it did in a game I was watching the other day. Yeah.
And it happens quite often because the theory there is that illegal block with whatever it is, blindside block, clip, you know, blocking the back, they figure that aids the runner in getting that far downfield. So, yeah, that and where that run ends, it, and then the spot of the foul's behind that, you're exactly right. It can be a huge penalty. It could be an 80-yarder.
Yeah. Okay. Let's go to Ray. Ray, you're on with Gerald Hodges.
Yeah, good afternoon, guys. Listen, I've got one question. This past Saturday when our wide receiver, Hyde, caught the ball and went down the sideline there, and they say he got pushed out of bounds before he scored the touchdown. They didn't review that play, and it didn't look like he got pushed out of bounds. Luckily enough for us, of course, the next play, we rushed up to the line of scrimmage for some odd reason and run the next play, and we threw another touchdown to the other wide receiver on the other side of the ball. Are there any particular reason why that particular play wasn't reviewable?
Yes, Ray, there is, and that's a replay rule. If the runner is ruled out of bounds, and even though, and there, I don't know this case because I didn't see it, but if he's the 5-yard in and they really stepped out, and he can, it reads as if a step and a dive can get him in the end zone, then you allow the touchdown. But if it's out further out in, it's a non-reviewable play. So that's, I'm sure they looked at it, but we couldn't stop it and change it. That's the deal.
Yeah, it was further out. That might be the reason why, but that's on fire when and just luckily we were able to score it on the next play. But, yeah, they showed the replay. I never did see him. Jimmy, you might know what play I'm talking about.
I do.
I never did see him go out of bounds. Just we were very fortunate that we were able to score the very next play. But anyway, thanks for my call, guys.
Thank you, Ray.
Yes, sir, Ray. Thank you.
Yeah, and part of it, there was a little bit on the replay I saw. There was a defender that was blocking the view a little bit. Now, I did not think he stepped out of bounds, but I can't say that with 100% certainty. But the thing I did not know, Gerald, and it was explained by Gene Sertori, if that's his name, I didn't know that if you were like 27 yards away, which is what it was, you can't say, no, he didn't step out of bounds, that's a touchdown. I didn't know that. I didn't know that rule until you just said it has to be within 5 yards of the end zone. Isn't that what you just said?
Right. Yeah. Yes, that's correct. Right. Yeah. And it's just, I guess, an anomaly in the rule. But, of course, the officials typically, and this is just since replays come in, like on a pass fumble or a runner down or fumble, they will let the play out. And because, like, if it's a pass fumble and they rule incomplete pass and kill the ball, then it's an incomplete pass. I mean, unless the defensive guy happens to fall on it on the first bounce or something like that. But it's better, you know, if, I guess, err on the side of safety, and then we can fix that. You know, we can put him out of bounds, I guess, Jimmy, but we can't put him back in bounds. Simplest way to say it.
We only got a couple of minutes left, but one, Gerald, one quick thing. I saw a play where the offense was at the 1 yard line, and they make quick substitutions, and they were wanting to run a play quickly, but the play was held up to allow the defense to substitute as well. But the defense was taking its sweet time, sort of like maybe some gamesmanship. How much time does the defense have to execute that? So those their substitutions before we'll let you move on.
Sure, Jimmy. They have to be making an effort to substitute. But if the offense runs a substitute in the, you know, that's the thing. There's no actual numerical number, but say there's 10 seconds on the game clock, and then the offense decides to substitute, and then they do, then the defense, I mean, they have to be in the act of substitute running a player in. Now, you know, if he's lollygagging around and that type of thing, they could, the defense could run the risk of getting a penalty for 12 men on the field. But if the offense, the first time that happens, they will warn the offense. Second time, the offense could be penalized for delay game themselves for not allowing, for doing it.
Yeah.
You know, if it felt like it's intentional to keep, the defense from substituting in time to get the playoff.
Hey, Gerald, thank you so much. Always great to catch up with you. Thank you for giving us your time to explain the rules as you do, and we look forward to visiting with you again next Monday.
Looking forward to it, Vince. You and Jimmy both have a great weekend.
You too. Thank you, Gerald.
Thank you.
Gerald's appearance brought to you by A.G. Hines & Company, selling building materials since anyone can remember.